AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
On Pilot TV this week, we're smoking targets alongside Keely Hawes in The Assassin on Prime Video, are getting banged up abroad with Sam Claflin in The Count of Monte Cristo on You and Drama, and catching up on a returning series, which might be The Gone or it might be The Mayfair Witches, depending on where you're sitting. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters. And I am, of course, joined by both Boyd Hilton and Kay Ribeiro,
both of
whom are buzzing with excitement. Why? Because we are a mere 2 weeks away from our live show at King's Place in London, our 350th live show. But more importantly, we can now reveal our guest, the keeper of the TARDIS himself, the man behind the Time Lord, Russell T. Davis, the notorious RTD, will be on the show with us as part of the team when we do the live show. That's incredibly exciting.
It's very exciting.
There could not be a finer guest.
I'm so excited.
For the Pilot TV.
I am so excited.
And it's brilliant. Yeah.
Coming
yeah.
all the way from Wales to see us.
From Wales? Oh, should I bring out the Welsh accent?
No.
As part of the
oh,
show?
My God, James, no.
Should I? No, I think, you know, do you think show some respect.
For yeah. Definitely not before, because
definitely
he might
not.
Pull out.
Right, that's
right?
true.
And during,
that's
I'd also
true.
Say, unwise.
Right. Okay.
During, particularly.
Definitely.
He
no.
wouldn't have the guts to do it to his face.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, he wouldn't.
No, I couldn't pull
he's
that.
He's all big and brave behind the microphone in the studio when it comes to actually insulting people to their face.
It's not an insult. It's a tribute to the great nation of Wales.
Well, you say that. As one listener commented on Pilot Plus in the postbag this week, it's a hate crime.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. No accents of any kind.
No.
That is the promise that I'm, let's be honest, not making for the live show.
Oh, dear.
But this is so exciting.
Well, very you know, exciting. Gather your questions.
Gather your questions.
Yeah. I'm sure listeners should gather their questions.
They should.
I'm sure we'll throw it open to the audience.
Yeah, and in fact, I mean, they can be sent in advance if you want. So if you would like to 100%. Email in...
That's probably a better way of doing
I
would think.
That's why I stealthily...
Yeah, see, she's not the mistress of the post bag for nothing.
Yes. Live production. Yeah,
yeah that's
yes.
good.
This is
yes.
what's happening.
If
so what
you would
gonna...
like your questions put to RTD, send them in advance and we'll drop them in during the show.
Yes, we will sort through them. I will sort through them. I'll take that task on. And so... James, if you'd like to repeat the email address.
It is. And it should be, I haven't checked, but it should be, as we speak, in the bio of the Pilot TV Instagram account. So if you
it
can't
is.
Find it, it
I've
should be there.
It.
Yes, come on. Well done, Harry. It is pilottv@empiremagazine.com.
Yes. So send in your questions for Russell. And also, if you have any questions, we are going to be doing a postbag in the live show at the end. So if you've got any, for our international listeners.
I think it's called a live Q&A.
Yeah, it's just called a Q&A. Yes.
Are you saying,
this is a spectacle.
Would you rather they bring their own laptops and maybe even postcards and fill them in and show them to us rather than just go to them and ask them a question from them?
Will you hold a bag out on the stage and they'll come up from the audience, put them in the bag, and then you'll read them out? Is that how it's going to work?
No, you sarky bastards. Actually, because I know there are a lot of international listeners who are disappointed not to be able to come.
Yeah. Right.
People
good point.
As far away as Australia,
that
Ireland,
is true.
Everywhere. So I want them to feel included because I'm an inclusive host.
Oh, isn't she lovely?
So I'm saying specifically, the shock and James voice. specifically, if you can't make it, but you'd like to ask a question or any thoughts or feedback, any abuse of James, please do send it through to the email address.
That makes
and
sense.
I will be fielding some of those questions. And comments.
Very good.
That's a good plan.
Mm. Perfect.
Thank you.
Fabulous. Now, before we get on to what we've been watching, I want to talk to you about Peanuts. Not, of course, Snoopy, but more specifically, the contents of, and if you're watching this on YouTube, just under the camera there is what can be only described as a large Nutribullet-type thing with a coloured straw sticking out of it. And Kay was drinking from this earlier. It was some kind of sludge. I'm unclear.
How rude.
And this was a peanut butter smoothie that you made in for breakfast.
Yes, I don't know why you've got some. And also, FYI, the reason why I put it there is because I thought, maybe it's not aesthetically pleasing for the camera.
For the camera,
but actually, you're bringing it up anyway. So, yes, I made, because I get... Because we record at 12 and this is interminable and I get hangry, I today decided to bring in a peanut butter and banana smoothie to give me some energy to deal with you two.
So it was for our benefit, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Oh, really? My God, 100%.
Yeah. Everything. It was always for our benefit.
No one needs me to be hangry in the room with you two.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
So that's what that is.
But also, it's a helpful way of me being able to remind people that we are actually on YouTube. Like, if you want to see us in the flesh, come down to the live show. But you can see us on YouTube, in the video, in full motion, whatever.
Yeah. Thanks for reminding me. I've always forget about that.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah. You're famous, Boydie.
I tell you, there's nothing more horrifying than just idly scrolling on Instagram and suddenly for me to see my gopher face on the thing. And I was like, oh my God, it's so...
Well, when does that happen? Usually, when things are clipped up, like a clip is put on...
Yeah.
But that's always of James talking
about... Yeah, primarily James making a bold... Yeah.
I don't do the clips.
Yeah, sure.
I don't do the clips.
I'm just asking, who instructs Harry about which clips to clip up?
Do you sit next to Harry?
Yeah.
No.
It's always clips where James is pontificating about something.
Harry's going, what should I clip up this week? And James is there hovering.
Yeah. It has nothing to do with
my takeaway tip is, if I just let James go on with his monologues and I don't say anything, then I won't be on camera because the camera doesn't activate. So I'm just going to let him.
You can't, one minute, you can't just stay silent for the...
Yeah, this is what I'm going to do.
It's frustrating.
I just don't want to be on camera,
Harry's an absolute maverick. He doesn't even run these things past me. I don't even know what he puts out there.
He knows you.
Anything.
He knows your ego. He's got the cut of you. So yeah. No, they're good clips.
He's got the cut of his gym.
Not just the cut
of you.
Yeah.
Not all that is. I mean,
it's a new idiom that Kay has coined.
Yeah, it's something sinister. Sorry.
Right, Kay, now that you are buzzing with peanut butter and bananas, tell us what you've been watching recently.
Oh my God, I've been watching a lot. So a couple of weeks ago, I forgot to mention that I finished the 4th series of Welcome to Wrexham. And I absolutely ruddy love it. I mean, the storytelling is epic. The way they film it and, just everything about it, I love it. The journey of this team and the supporters and the residents of Wrexham is brilliant. And the fairy tale ending, of course. Now, one issue I do have, James, I don't know if you're a regular viewer of Wrexham.
I'm not, but I have seen it for this podcast.
Right. Funnily enough, James does not watch a docu-soap about the management of a football club.
Well, I know how fond he is of Wales and the Welsh accent.
That is true. Okay, I do love Wales.
Mm.
All right.
Well, all I'm saying is justice for Paul Mullen, okay? Because he was benched in this season. And I've now done some extensive research, investigative journalism, i.e. looking on Google, and he's now on loan, and I'm furious. I'm furious at this boy because where's the loyalty? And I know that's not how football works, and that's why I can't watch it, because I get very, emotionally invested like that. But he helped create this.
There is no loyalty in football. Yeah.
Furious. I'm angry.
No, okay.
I mean, I will still watch the next series, but I will be angry
that's
about it.
That's big of you. Yeah.
So Wrexham finished, and then just quickly... I watched the first episode of a documentary series on Disney Plus called Hurricane Katrina, Race Against Time, because it's 20th anniversary. It's 20 years on since it happened. And this series documents exactly what happened, the days leading up to the hurricane hitting New Orleans, the failure of the federal government to support the local black population, poor population, and basically the aftermath. And it's fascinating. I've only watched one episode, but I would recommend. And finally, Destination X. Now, have you heard of it, James?
I have not.
I know Boyd will know about it. It's Ryden competition reality show series where these competitors go on a European adventure and they have to kind of determine where they are, which you'd think would be easy. But the twist in the tale is they are being transported in blacked out coaches and are wearing goggles, which limit what they can see. So they have to kind of identify where they are via clues. They have to sift through red herrings. So I'm sure, Boyd, you know about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Coming up later this week.
Yes.
Yes.
What I would say is, I think it's unnecessarily convoluted. Ooh. But the thing that lifts it, as you would expect, is host Rob Ryden, who brings his fun camp energy to it. He's very entertaining. So that, I would say, is the... not the saving grace, but I think it makes it more entertaining, his contribution. So yeah, that's Destination X.
Which is on, let me just tell you, because it's not on yet, listeners. It's coming up on Wednesday and Thursday this week.
At 9
BBC
o'clock.
BBC One, 9 p.m. Yeah. And he's excellent. Yeah. I was there on the set of Gavin and Stacey.
Clang.
The finale last autumn. And chatting away to Rob Ryden. And he goes, I've been offered this reality competition thing, which is like Traitors meets Race Across the World. And I was like,
meets
Coach
Trip.
Meets Coach Trip a bit, yeah. And so, yeah, well, he was just about to do it. And he was like, I think it's really good. I think it's going to be really good. And, you know, just a different thing for him because he hasn't done... Like, he's hosts Would I Lie to You, obviously, the best comedy panel show on TV. But...
it's a great role for him.
Yeah, he hasn't done this before. And he's brilliant in it. Yeah. He's absolutely... I think it's a fun format. It's mad. But it kind of doesn't make any sense. It's like quite overly complicated.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be a big hit, yeah, because I think it's very addictive.
Okay. And finally, because I like to keep up to date, James, as you know, and be very current, on BBC iPlayer, they have Pride and Prejudice, the 1995 adaptation by Andrew Davies, and I just absolutely binged that at the weekend. All six episodes. I love it. It is the original and best adaptation.
Why did you suddenly... I saw this on Instagram about this as well, I believe.
Yeah.
Why have you suddenly decided... Did you stumble upon it accidentally?
No, I tell you why.
You were just daydreaming of what's his name? Colin Firth's wet chest?
It is my favourite Austen novel, but what happened is on Friday, I'm not going to go into it because I talked about it on Plus, I had to abort my mission to go to the cinema to see
Ballad Gate.
Yeah, see the Ballad of Wallace Island and
the Ballad of Kay's Extraordinary Journey.
My ineptitude turned that into a film in itself.
and in the evening, I went to an open air performance of Pride and Prejudice. Someone invited me for free, very sweetly. I think they saw how distressed I was about what happened during the day, and so I watched that performance, and it reminded me how much I loved the TV adaptation.
Oh, so you watched like a theatrical performance?
Yes, sorry, yeah.
Not screening of the film.
No.
It was in Stately Gardens.
Yeah. So it was very nice, and I was like, oh God, I really wanted to watch that, and BBC iPlayer has it, so. That's
what I'm watching. Nice. Jane Austen. It is a truth universally acknowledged that Kay will never make it to Guildford. True story.
I love how you call it Guildford. You know the D is silent.
It's Guildford. Guildford.
Yeah.
Is it only Guildford if you're from Essex, Boydie? Is that how it works?
Well, it's not in Essex, but...
no, but you're from Essex, is what I'm saying.
You don't pronounce the D, right?
Guildford. No, actually, you don't.
Guildford.
Americans
call it Guildford. Like they say Leicester Square. I'm going to Leicester Square. Guildford.
This is the absolute revelation. It is Guildford.
Yes.
Guildford.
Yes.
Is anyone listening to this from
Guildford?
The place Guildford.
Kay is pretty much from Guildford.
Well, no, I don't.
Guildford.
Guildford.
No, it's not. Guildford. Honestly, it's a silent
I think it's Guildford.
Guildford. Yeah.
Guildford.
You're only doubting it because
Guildford sounds a bit street. Like Guildford. Guildford, innit?
Well, Ilford. It rhymes with Ilford in Essex. That is in Essex.
Yeah, but that doesn't have a D in it, does it?
No, but
it's not Ilford.
But. It's like Leicester Square doesn't have a light. Like
To be fair, the English language is an absolute nightmare because nothing is consistent.
But funny, I'm so glad that we're having this discussion because I remember you mentioned it last time and I meant to pick you up on it.
How do you pronounce the place where the Cutty Sark is?
Where's the Cutty Sark? Greenwich, yeah, good example. So, Greenwich.
But Greenwich.
Not
but
Greenwich.
No, oh, but, you're not saying Greenwich,
but,
are you, James?
No, but a lot of people call it Greenwich.
What?
Greenwich rather than Greenwich. That is true.
You're mad people who call it Guildford.
I don't call it Greenwich.
The James Army.
I don't call it Greenwich. Oh, but some people call it Greenwich, not Greenwich.
Who name these people?
I can't give you names.
No, that's rubbish.
Look, listeners, if you are from Guildford or Guildford, please let us know how you prefer it to be pronounced. And yes, if you're from Greenwich as well, please let us know in the postbag for Pilot Plus. I feel this is an important public service.
Anyway, what have you guys been watching?
Anyway, can I just say, by the way, Hurricane Katrina documentary is on tonight, if you're listening to this on Monday, on National Geographic and Disney Plus.
Just to, you know. Yeah.
Where, in case people are wondering. But
it's a Boogle.
Where can I watch?
Boyd will always be here to give the actual details.
Exactly.
Mercifully.
Exactly. And you think I'm not listening. You think, but I'm always looking up, you know, just to keep people abreast of the situation. The Guildford Massive, who will listen to the podcast.
I think we should call him Computer, like Bear, you know, because he's always there, available, looking at the internet, ready to correct our mistakes.
I mean, yeah, I don't mind that comparison. That's fine. What have I been watching? I had to write about Wednesday coming up in Heat Magazine.
So what
I
day watched. Is that on?
Well, okay, it's on. Next Friday. No, it's on Wednesday.
Yeah, it's
almost like you missed the joke.
Oh, I certainly missed the joke. Because, you know, you need to know when it's on.
Yeah.
It's on Wednesday, the 6th of August.
That's Netflix marketing in action right there.
It really is.
Mm. I mean, if they hadn't, it would be ridiculous, right?
It is.
Yeah.
It is heavily embargoed. So I think we'll be reviewing it in Plus, will we? I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyway.
Are you going to run roughshod over it and just give a review now?
No, I'm not going to. I would never do that. I would never break the rules like that. Okay. But what I would say is there's interesting new characters. There are interesting new characters joining the cast for this season, including Steve Buscemi. And if you're a fan. Well, indeed. Now, I deliberately bring this up because this is the first role I've seen him do since he was named and mentioned extensively in The Studio.
Yes.
The hilarious comedy show about, because there's a whole discussion about how to pronounce his name. And he's in the first episode with Martin Scorsese. Scorsese, however you want to pronounce that. And what does he say in there? Now, I forgot because there's Buscemi.
I believe.
There's like three different.
It is pronounced Buscemi.
And then Buscemi.
Yeah.
Right. And which one does he
say? But do we rely on James now? Because he's not a reliable font of knowledge.
Right.
Anymore,
am I an unreliable narrator? Possibly.
Yeah.
But I believe it's Buscemi.
Okay, that's the one that he says is how to say it in the show,
always
right?
I don't remember what he says
there's a moment
in the studio.
Where everyone's like telling him how to say it, and he says, Buscemi, yeah, or whatever it is, in the kind of, he should know how to say his own name. Anyway, Steve is in, he is in the new second season of Wednesday. He's the new head of the school where they all go to. And the other character, interesting character that's in it, is Joanna Lumley, your favourite, Jo Lumley. Jo Lummers has joined the thing as the grandmother of Wednesday, if you like.
Is she fabulous?
Well, I'm not even going to say that. I'm just saying she's in it.
Okay.
And it adds a whole new level of interest.
See, Netflix, he does listen.
Even for you, because you might, for example, you might be one of those people who doesn't necessarily like this kind of genre. Although it is, you know, it's like comedy. I was going to say it's horror. It's very comedic horror. It's using horror, I'm trying to avoid the word tropes, horror ideas and imagery. But really, it's a comedy. It's an out-and-out comedy. So it's nothing to be afraid of, if you like.
Okay.
It's like 12A, you know, kind of.
That's
region.
Never stopped me before.
I know, it's never stopped me before, because you're a scaredy cat.
Yeah, I'm such a scaredy cat.
I think you'll be fine with it. But I'll be looking forward to us reviewing it fully. Catherine Zeta-Jones, she plays the mother, and Joanne is her mother. Yeah. I was interested in watching it because I think I dropped out halfway through season one. But it's a massive, massive hit for Netflix. It's in there. I think it's in their top three or four of all time, like along with Adolescence and... what were the other ones?
Squid Game.
Squid Game, thank you. Bridgerton. I think it's even above Bridgerton Wednesday. It was a huge, big hit for them. Yeah, and I don't think anyone was expecting
it. It's popular with the kids. My niece is very into it.
Massive with the kids, yeah, absolutely. So I watched that. And then one of my... a good example of how on linear television it still has a role to play, because... Like Sky shows, for example, they're all available whenever you want to watch them. If you want to watch, you know, the White Lotus, wherever, you can crank up your Sky and it'll be there in the on-demand section and it's all fine. It's part of what you pay your subscription for. But I happened to be scrolling around, looking at what was on, waiting, I think, for football to start, because we're in the middle of England, by the way, in the final of the Euros on Sunday, which will have happened by the time this comes out. But good luck to the England women. But I was probably waiting for football to start. So I was scrolling around. And then I was like, oh, this is interesting. Enlightened is on. It's being shown on Sky Atlantic. Enlightened is the thing that Mike White, the creator of The White Lotus, did before The White Lotus.
Oh.
That was the TV series he made. He wrote, quite often directed, and actually starred in as well as a supporting character. And it was co-created by him and Laura Dern, who is the star of it. And it's about, and this was a show, it's like a, it's a comedy about, it's described by, its tagline is about a woman on the verge of a nervous breakthrough, because she deals with all kind of wellness. It kind of dealt with wellness and the wellness industry and all ideas of wellness before it really took off and became the massive thing it is now. It was kind of ahead of its time in a way. And she's got a kind of like office job, and which she comes back to, but she gets demoted. She has an affair with the boss. Basically, she does everything wrong. Her decision-making is a disaster all the way through. And it's kind of part of the comedy. Often the comedy comes out of her making terrible decisions. But it's also massive social faux pas, excruciating. You wouldn't be able to cope with it. Even more than The White Lotus, the comedy is built on
embarrassment.
I haven't watched
this, Boyd.
humiliation.
What channels? Which Sky channel?
It's on Sky. It's on Sky Atlantic. I think I assume they're rerunning it generally at the moment, because then there was like two more. They show them in batches, so you'll get, you know, three episodes in a row. But it'll all be there to watch on their on demand service.
Enlightened.
And what's interesting is, but cover the, it's really, really good. And I didn't watch it all. I remember when it came out, it just wasn't a big deal somehow. It was like one of those, it was an HBO show. Mike White wasn't as huge, big a star in terms of a creator of shows pre the White Lotus. And and it was axed after two seasons. There's only like two series of it. And I kind of underestimated it. But when you watch it now, with the awareness of what comes next in his career, it all makes sense. Because a lot of the concerns of and themes of The White Lotus are there in the show. And Laura Dern is fucking brilliant in it. She's absolutely amazing. She's so engaging and watchable and fun. And there are so many, I do enjoy the comedy of excruciating stuff. So I kind of lapped it up. Visually, it's like, you know, White Lotus is absolutely beautiful. This is just fairly standard the way it's shot and made, because it's more of a kind of out and out, in a way, almost sitcom, but out and out comedy. So it doesn't have the lush vibe of The White Lotus. But if you forget about that and you just go for the story and the characters, it's really, really good.
I'm going to watch that, Boyd. Thank you.
Pleasure. Speaking of the comedy of excruciating stuff, have you ever watched I Think You Should Leave?
Yes.
Tim Robinson?
Yes.
Because that is...
Yes.
Weapons grade excruciation.
Absolutely, yeah.
Excruciosity, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Excruciatude. Excruciatude. Excruciosity. I'm struggling to say it now.
Yeah.
Because I watched Friendship last week.
Yeah.
Which is the film he's in with Paul Rudd.
I can't believe you could sit through it.
I very nearly didn't. It was one of the most stressful experiences of my life.
Yeah. What was it?
It's a film.
It's Tim Robinson. It is a film. Mm-hmm. But he is obviously famous for the show on TV and for his comedy. And I've almost never seen anything as excruciating.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It nearly gave me a panic attack.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Yeah. Obviously you have to watch it. Didn't they review it last week on Empire? You were away, I think.
I was away, yes. I was going to be on that show and then I wasn't.
Right.
But I watched it for that show.
Yes.
But yeah, it nearly killed me.
I think it's great, that film. And he's brilliant. And that role was written for him because he'd shown his mastery of excruciating.
It's Andrew DeYoung, isn't it, who wrote and directed
He showed his mastery. But that sketch show is a massive deal. That kind of like was one of the most acclaimed and... kind of inventive shows. Yeah, I remember I did mention it years ago when it first came out, because it became a kind of word of mouth phenomenon. It's like 15 minute episodes, so it's kind of easy. But it goes way out there in terms of like freaky situations and characters, etc. He's a brilliant talent. Yeah. So yeah.
Are there any sketch shows currently running on TV?
That's a very interesting question. First of all, I would say the Mitchell and Webb are back soon with their sketch show, a revival of their...
I thought he did that on purpose.
Oh. Because
the news is just...
No, it's totally coincidental, yeah. If I was invited to the screening, yesterday. So they're reviving their own sketch show, but with a new... They're being it, obviously, but with a new younger cast as well, of like young, up-and-coming, more up-and-coming comedians. So that is... coming back. There is a sketch show on. Well, there's a mini wave of new ones announced. The Larry David one I mentioned in news last week. He's doing this sketch show about
more
American history.
Talent.
Produced by Barack Obama, more young talent. Barack and Michelle Obama.
Give these guys a chance.
Yeah. So there's more and more of them being commissioned right now and about to come out, as in Mitchell and Webb. But right now on TV, let me think. I don't think there is a sketch show on TV at the moment. As in like running live.
Are you something, James?
Yes, this podcast. No, I'm not at all. It's curious because I recall very strongly, you know, whether it be during the 90s or the 80s stuff, like sketch shows were just everywhere.
Yeah.
Like it was very much a staple of the comedic landscape. And now they feel anomalies.
Remember Jamie Demetriou of Stafflet's Flats fame? Mm. He did a one-off hour-long sketch show for Netflix that I loved. I don't know if you remember.
It was amazing.
I think it was brilliant. Obviously, it'll be on Netflix now. But I always thought that was with a view to doing a series, but the series hasn't happened as yet. So again, that's like there are one-off examples and there are occasional examples, but yeah, definitely. I think the wave is coming back for sketch shows. Intriguingly,
that's called A Whole Lifetime with Jamie Demetriou. By the way, if you want to check it on Netflix,
there you go. Okay. So you watched, all you were watching was a film, basically.
Yeah, that was one of the things I was doing. It's not the only thing I was watching. What else did I watch? I watched a number of episodes of This Life for Pilot Plus.
Oh, yeah.
My first foray into the world of This Life. You can listen to that on the most recent Pilot Plus if you are that way inclined. The only other thing is I've watched two other shows, and I can tell you what they are. But I can't talk about them because obviously they're both embargoed. No, and that annoys people.
They're used to that.
But I will simply say, I did do As Threatened and I watched all of Slow Horses.
Oh, so have I.
Which was my weekend. And I don't believe it's breaking any kind of particular embargo. I'd say it's fabulous.
I mean, it's breaking our rules.
Yeah.
But it isn't, though, is it? Because Slow Horses is just fabulous by default.
It could have taken a massive downturn.
Yes, it's jumped the shark massively. We're really right off a cliff.
When they shot Gary Oldman in the first moment, that was really surprising.
Slow Horse taken to the knackers.
Oh, it's gone to shit. Yeah, no, it hasn't. It's fabulous.
I forgot to say, I watched the whole thing as well.
What I found fascinating.
Are you annoyed you got it in first?
Not really, no. I'm glad you reminded me because because it was so long ago now. It was like almost a week ago that I forgot.
Oh God, you two are ridiculous. You're just so ridiculous.
And you know what I would say as well? Did you? They have the trailer.
Yes, it's literally what I was about to say.
Oh, sorry,
yes.
Go on.
So it's amazing that it is obviously renewed for season 7. This is season 5, but it's wild that season 6 is already in the can because at the end of the finale of this season, you get the next season on Slow Horses and you're like, we're not going to, I don't even know when we're going to see that. Another year and a half? And
it won't be that much. It'll be a minimum a year, maximum a year.
Well, no, from now. A minimum, a year from when it airs. From there till September.
But that's on you guys for watching it too
exactly.
early, right?
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, you know, so we've got a big old wait for that, but that one looks even better.
Yes. No, I thought it looks even better.
Yeah.
I thought the trailer for the next season looks incredible.
It does.
That looks like the best season ever. So without any judgment of the season that us two watched.
Fabulous.
Gratuitously. The trailer is brilliant.
You two are just...
For some reason, and I watched it, like 3 times. Oh my God, this looks incredible.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's one of the best things on TV, and I delight in it.
Very smiley.
It made my weekend. I had such a good time. Mm-hmm. I had such a good time. And I have also watched Alien Earth, which we'll be reviewing on the live show because it's out that week.
Yeah, I've got those ready to watch. I think I'm going to watch them this weekend, actually. Kate running scared of an alien-based sci-fi horror. I mean,
it's all my favourite thing.
Yeah, it is all your favourite thing.
What a treat for the life.
Problem?
What's your problem? Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it because as Alien is, you know what Alien is? The original Alien, the first Alien?
Is it your favourite film of all time?
It's one of my favourite films of all time.
Is it pronounced Alien? Is that what you're going to say?
Alien. It is one of my favourite films of all time, genuinely. And if you really want to provoke an argument, you know what you do with Alien, Kay?
Go on.
You say to James...
Oh, here we go.
You say...
Have another wrong opinion.
Anyone who, in their right mind, knows that Alien, the original, is better than Aliens,
I mean, it's not,
sequel.
But sure.
But if you're James Dyer, Aliens, the sequel, is literally your favourite film of all time.
Do you know what?
And you will brook no compromise.
No.
Do you know what? Usually I would fully endorse Poking the Bear, but on this occasion, because it's film, and because I have no interest in that film...
She's shutting it down.
Yeah, you're shutting it down. It's just an FYI.
No, it's good. I would like to add it to the arsenal of things to tease him about.
No, but I mean, but this is interesting because we're going to be watching and reviewing Alien Earth, so you should watch Alien and its superior sequel, Aliens, before we do the show.
Alien is perfectly good, very good sequel.
Listen,
but just obviously not as good as
the original. Lucky if I even watch the TV show.
That's fair. And that's what I've been watching.
Very good.
Yeah. Okay. I've got a question, Boydie. Do we have a guest this week?
No, I don't think we do.
We don't.
No.
Okay.
Oh, is that,
you were going to do an interview for this week.
It never happened. No, it's never happened. No, sorry. Yeah.
All right. Good to know.
Keely Hawes
and Freddie Highmore.
And Freddie Highmore. Yeah. No, we were. Yeah. It's never.
It just didn't happen.
It hasn't come to fruition yet.
Okay,
anyway, I mean, it could be one of those where it ends up being.
People say we're shambolic, but I don't know if we are.
I think we are.
Organized chaos.
I think people.
I mean,
appreciate...
I spoke to them at the launch. Of course you did.
Of course.
But we haven't been given a slot. For interviewing.
I think people enjoy this kind of live administration.
Is it yet another reason why people think, I'm not sure?
Yeah, maybe.
Anyway, come and see us at the live event. We'll be really organised.
Yeah, so organised. The most organised we've ever been. All right, should we have a listener question instead?
Yes, let's. And it's less of a question, more of a comment. And it's from Elliot. Look, James gets worried that it's going to be a criticism.
No, not that. It's just now the listener comment section, but carry on.
Are you the postmistress? No. Okay, so this is from Elliot, who says, in your intro to the mixtape review, James asked whether teenagers send each other Spotify playlists.
Oh, yes, I did.
Yes. So you got in touch to say, having been a teenager recently, he's 21. We have young listeners.
Wow. Woo-hoo!
He says, I can confirm I both made and received Spotify playlists as a teenager. It's not quite the same as a mixtape, is it? Thinking it was cool, I did actually make mixtapes as a teenager too, which was a challenge, but much more satisfying. The flaw was that there was only one of my other friends who had a cassette player.
I was going to say, you give it to someone, they'll be like, what the fuck am I going to do with this?
Yeah. So I thought that was very sweet. Yeah, so, I mean...
Cassette players have come back, haven't they?
No. Yeah.
No, they have. No. There was a whole feature on it, on something I listened to.
Really?
Yeah, on the radio,
but
yeah.
Here's the question I have for you, and I've never fully understood this. So obviously vinyl has had a resurgence, and I get that a little bit, because vinyl, the artifact, a record is just cool, right? It's just a cool object, an objet d'art, if you will. And but
and
the thing
I
is,
will.
And people say, oh, like, it gives a better sound. They sound better. They're warmer. I must admit, I don't see that. They just have like little crackly bits. I don't love that myself. But I get that there's a thing. But tapes are just objectively shit and have always been shit. Because half the time, I don't know if you had this like in the sort of 1890s where.
1890s.
In the 1890s, yes, when I was a young man. Especially with Walkmans, you couldn't always guarantee they would play at the speed they were designed to play at, where they'd only be playing a little bit too fast or a little bit too slow and the song would just sound weird.
Was that a setting you had it on?
I don't think so. I think it was just shitty Walkmans. But this is genuinely a thing that I used to
love Walkmans.
Yeah, and CDs, obviously, that digital, good.
I had a Discman as well.
Did you?
Yeah.
Discmans were really uncool.
That was very posh.
Yeah.
Well, it was so clunky as well.
I wasn't carrying it around because it was pretty lame, but I don't know.
Okay.
I never had a Discman.
But what I would say is I got a little test for you because we've recently watched something where a Walkman was in the show. So watch
Mixtape.
Mixtape, yeah.
No, not that. Oh. And there wasn't a Walkman in there, actually.
Yes, there was.
No, there wasn't.
Yes, there was.
He's
listening
course.
To it all the time.
Yeah. Sorry, I forgot the dual timeline. I was like, when was Jim Sturgeon listening to Walkman?
Oh, now this is on the tip of my brain.
Yeah.
Yes, there was.
Tip of your brain tongue. Come on.
Not this life, obviously. He's listening to a Walkman on this life, by the way.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
And one of the things I thought about this, I'm sorry to go back to that very quickly, and I meant to mention this when we talked about it on Pilot Plus, is what a difference it makes when there's no mobile phones.
Yeah.
Even. Mobile phones.
Well, it shifts the whole nature of the show,
whole
doesn't
thing
it?
Is
the whole
incredible.
That entire show is predicated on the idea that he has no way of getting in touch.
There's one bit where he has to go to a phone box and use a phone book, and you're like, oh my God, it really makes a difference. Anyway...
Stranger Things, which I watched recently, that has a Walkman in it.
Yeah, yeah.
We've just reviewed it. Guys.
Wait a minute. Oh, you did your own rewatch.
Yes.
Yeah, what was it? We
not
just reviewed.
Okay.
Not no.
Well, it definitely wasn't
okay,
the narrow
clue.
Road to the distant north.
No.
Or whatever it was called.
God, no.
Deep north.
Okay, I'm going to give you a clue.
Yeah.
Copacabana.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's Danny Dyer. It's Mr. Big Stuff.
Mr. Big Stuff.
Yeah. Yes.
Well,
he's sitting there in the street.
He's there. He's a recycling vigilante. And he's
very
just listening
good.
To his Walkman, which he's found in a bin.
Do you know what? Yes. It shows how old I am that I didn't even for 1 second bump on the fact that he was using a tape-based Walkman. I just accepted it. It never occurred to me, why are you using that archaic piece of technology?
He found it in a bin. Someone
didn't occur to me that was somehow out of time.
Oh, I looked at it and I thought, that's a funny little... thing. It's a funny little observation, that he would...
If he'd been using like a Zoom or something, I'd have definitely bumped on that.
Yeah, God, I remember that, yeah.
So anyway, that was our young listener got in touch. We're grateful for Elliot, and he has confirmed that people, like young kids, are swapping Spotify playlists. So
that's quite wholesome. I like that still happens.
Yeah.
Although, God help them if like the object of their desire is in the Apple ecosystem and doesn't use Spotify. What do they do then?
I mean,
don't go out with him.
Like me.
That's it. I will not date you. You're
I'm
on Apple Music.
I'm having to filter you out on the basis you don't have an Apple product.
God, also, do you think it's like that? Oh, no, you're on Deezer. Ooh.
I don't know. God, this is an insight to me. I do judge... Oh, God, this is such a...
Oh, no, I want to hear this now.
This is a media wanker thing to say, but the difference between a PC and a Mac, I do sort of like...
Really?
...bump against...
You judge PC people harshly.
Yeah, that's probably all our listeners. Sorry.
Oh yeah, wow. I do as well. But actually, then you realise that I'm sure you would concur with this. That isn't it? Like gamers think that PCs are better than Macs.
Well, I think also most people in most jobs, I think, generally use PCs unless they're in creative professions. Unless they're designers or journalists, I think most people use PCs.
It's just just a wank. It's like an ego thing.
It's certain, certain industries. It's not just it's not about wanking, Kate. It's specifically about having certain
industries. It's media people use it, and we
you can
are
get porn
generally...
on PCs just as easily.
God, I wouldn't know about that, James. Whatever your plans for the weekend are, you can to yourself. Thanks.
No, that's how I watch Slow Horses. I don't know how to tell you. But look, guys. No, it is. I know what you're saying, but then people like a certain person who Boydie holds in very, very high regard, feels exactly the same way, but in reverse. Ooh, she has absolute contempt for Max.
Who's that?
Sophie.
Helen.
Helen O'Hara. Yeah, she's a dyed-in-the-wool PC-er, uses an Android phone, will have none of this
happening.
Really?
Why? Does that affect
your affections for Helen?
No, not at all.
If it was anyone else, I just
with Helen about lots of things, but including the Fantastic Four film. Anyway, another film bit. But that's weird. That's interesting. I remember back in the day before, like, you know, Steve Jobs turned the company around. That's how long ago I've been into Apple products. But
I used to sell Apple products in the 90s because I worked in a computer store. Like, I used to sell computer games and computers.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
And where was this store? In
this
Guildford?
It was not in Guildford. It was in Harrow Town Centre. In Harrow Town Centre, I worked in, there was a company called Silica, and it was a concession within Debenhams in Harrow.
I bet you were good at that job.
And I don't know that was. I had a little ponytail.
Oh, I need to see a photo. Bring the photo.
Okay, this is it. Right, guys. If you
like the nerdy guy in The Simpsons. What's his name, that character?
Yeah, comic store guy.
Okay, this is the extra bonus. If you come to the live event show, maybe we will show that photo.
I don't have a photo.
You must have a photo of you in a ponytail.
Well, not from work, no.
I've been obsessed with Apple products for so long, and I used to be I remember when the iPod was created, it being the biggest moment of my life practically, because it was like, oh my God, I was first in the queue. I timed a visit to New York for when the iPhone came out so I could get it pretty much on the opening day, which I think was marginally ahead of when they came out in the UK. And I was absolutely obsessed with Apple product. Mm. Yeah. And I would go around when I was on holiday looking for Apple products you couldn't get in Britain when they were on sale already in America. So I could not be further from...
Well, until Apple want to sponsor us, no more Apple chat now, because we've spoken about them quite a lot, haven't we?
Sorry to have bored you.
Kay's moved us on again.
Some people might be interested.
Well, I'm just thinking, to TV
Next.
And we've talked about Apple products and me and my
prejudice. Apple TV Plus is quite a big streaming service, actually. Again, you could not imagine Apple would have been involved. This is a TV point.
Yeah.
Valid. My final point on Apple product is if you just said to me 20, 30 years ago, by the way, in the 2020s, Apple will be running the most acclaimed TV shows around, I'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah,
it is extraordinary.
And actually, it's my favourite platform.
Although, to be fair, when they launched, you know, they came out the gate swinging. See, their first big show, you know, they knew exactly what they were doing from the get-go.
The morning show.
That's what I'm saying.
They knew with the morning show, which I still haven't got the screeners for. I check it pretty much every day.
You haven't seen it, Boydie?
Why would you say that out loud? You know what's coming from him. Just don't give him the platform to do
it. You know what? It's been so long since I've seen them. I've almost forgotten what happened.
Has anyone got any news?
I thought that was the other question dealt with.
Yes. Yeah. So we should move on to this week's news. And what news have we got?
Well, so I'm surprised by this, but obviously delighted for Owen Wilson fans that his golf comedy Stick has been renewed for a second series on
Apple TV Plus.
I think that was that dates back to the two Ronnies.
Oh my God, listen.
Speaking of sketch shows,
I've just said we've got one young listener. Don't make the tune up. They just like heard the two Ronnies.
That is one for the kids, that reference.
Yeah.
Anyway,
can I just preempt any criticism? If there is a sketch show that I've forgotten about that is on TV at the moment, I apologise in advance. I'm sure there is something I've forgotten. I was racking my brain, I Googled it, there probably is a sketch show that's on. Carry on.
Okay. Well, while we're doing apologies, sorry for any PC hatred I've had. Anyway, it's been renewed for a second season.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're sticking with it.
Yeah, indeed. Also, I don't know if this is of interest. It'll be of interest to Boyd particularly. Mm. Only Murders in the Building's got a date.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the 9th of December. It's going to land on Disney Plus.
What date did you say?
9th of September. I think I said December.
I think you said December, which is my birthday. So that was a bit confusing.
That would be quite the present, Boyd.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be. And both of us would chip in so you could fly to New York to watch it.
Thank you. Oh, wow. I mean...
What a treat. Yeah. When I say both of us, James...
Okay.
Yeah, sorry, the 9th of September on Disney Plus.
Yes.
And that'll be the fifth season.
That is exciting. And a huge, the cast list is just incredible. I don't know if you've got it to hand, but anyway, it's just, yeah, incredible array of brilliant guest stars, half of which were in the previous season, to be fair. Mm-hmm. So they've kind of retained the core. Yeah, but that is exciting. I still love that show, by the way. And let's never forget the fact that we did it week by week and James
just refused.
It was like an opt-out.
I just failed.
Like, yeah. I mean, I think it was just to give him time to have like eye rest or something.
I can't.
I do like when he does that because yeah. I just add it to my list of things I'm allowed to do because he's done it.
Yeah. I think he actually would have preferred the last season more than any other because it was much more immersed in the Hollywood. It was more like Hollywood self-referential stuff.
Yeah.
And it was better. Fun.
It was previous better. Series. Yeah, it was actually better, yeah.
Yeah, right. That one that we watched, which was series... Two? Oof. Which one did we review?
I think it was three.
Well, whichever one it was, I did struggle a lot with
I
that.
I did as well, James.
It was a series of highs and lows, to be fair.
Focusing on the lows. Any other news?
Well, there's big news from Channel 4.
What?
They're going to be putting out a multi-part Taylor Swift documentary. It's very, very exciting. It doesn't have a title, apart from possibly just Taylor. It's a working title.
But Swift?
Are you sure talking about Sheridan?
It could be about Taylor Sheridan. It doesn't look like it's about Taylor Sheridan. I would be less inclined to watch. Do you know what? I'm not even sure I would be less inclined to watch that. That would be fascinating. Taylor Sheridan's rise from like Deputy Hale on Sons of Anarchy to like dominating modern television.
This is a self-debate in action. Yeah.
Would I watch it? Yes,
yeah,
I would.
Self-debate.
Yeah. Mass self-debate. Yeah.
All right, go on.
But yeah, that's pretty much all the information that they're making a multi-part Taylor Swift documentary.
But you know what?
Which we will review on this podcast.
The biggest story of the week in television is, you know what that is? It's the ongoing scandal of CBS's cancellation of The Late Show of Stephen Colbert.
I mean, that is actually very true.
This is an absolute... This takes in Donald Trump, CBS, the merger that's supposed to be happening soon with CBS and that production company, whatever it's called, I've forgotten the name of. And it's just... And it's shaking American culture to its foundations. The latest... David Letterman's issued... this is that news today. Issued a 20-minute video in which he talks about how the CBS, the BS, stands for bullshit, and all these people are supporting Stephen Colbert. All of his rival talk show hosts went on his show the other night to do a sketch.
Oh, wow.
He did a monologue on Monday's show after Trump said, I absolutely love that Colbert got fired. His talent was even less than his ratings. Classic Donald Trump. And he told him to go fuck himself in the Stephen Colbert.
His ratings, we should point out, he was by far and away the market leader in the late night talk show arena.
Yeah, so the whole content, The Late Show is the biggest of the late night chat shows by far. It's the biggest hit. Now, what's interesting is depending on who you talk to, does it or does it not make money? So according to CBS, it loses the money. I think something like $40 million a year, they were saying.
40?
40, yeah.
Wow.
Which, I mean, sounds like a lot, but in the scheme of things, believe it or not, in TV, American TV, isn't huge loss. But then other people say, well, no, it makes money, and it has, because they clip it up on YouTube, etc., and, you know, show us the figure, show us the proof that it's actually losing money. I remember when James Corden decided to end The Late Late Show, which was the show after on CBS, after the Stephen Colbert. So Stephen Colbert show used to lead into his chat show, that you'd be surprised, even though it seems like a fairly cheap type of genre of television, a chat show, what do you need? You just need your host, guests who are promoting stuff anyway, so it's not that you have to pay them. And what you do have in these show, American shows, is a massive staff. So on the Late Late Show, James's show, I think he had about 150 people working on it.
You got the writers, you got everyone. Right?
Everyone, writers,
and
production.
With James's show, you had all the production of Carpool Karaoke and all that.
Exactly, all of that. Yeah. So I think that was probably more expensive than Stephen Colbert's show, because Stephen Colbert has bits, pre-filmed bits and stuff. Of course, they all do, but not as many as James had in his show. But according to CBS, this whole genre, they're basically almost kind of saying this genre is dying before our eyes, the late night chat show, which for me is really sad because I love that stuff. You know, I've read all the books about it. There's some, you know, me being on set that time when I visited James Corden's, I had access to all areas behind the scenes to see how the show was made. It was like one of the greatest days of my life, honestly. So this whole thing is wild. And what people are saying is that CBS is acquiescing to Donald Trump because Donald Trump sued them over an interview in, I think it was 60 Minutes. If I get the details of this
wrong, it was 60
by
minutes,
the way, again, apologies because this is off the top of my head. He accused 60 Minutes of re-editing an interview to make him look bad. And And CBS gave in and basically agreed a deal with to pay him off, I think, like 19 million or
something.
16, thank you.
Wait, so they were admitting they had?
Yeah,
so,
well.
Bearing in mind that they had initially said this was an entirely baseless lawsuit.
Yeah.
And let's say, like, baseless lawsuits seem to be quite common at the moment. And if you were, you know, you wouldn't necessarily need a tinfoil hat, but if you were a conspiracy type theory, you might say that them settling this lawsuit for 16 million, which they had said was baseless. It's interesting timing given that their parent company, Paramount, is looking to merge with Skydance and they need FCC approval for that. And so if Trump doesn't want that to happen, he could stop it happening. So one might argue that it just looks convenient. That this is when it happened, and also convenient the cancellation of the show, because Stephen Colbert did, shall we say, call attention to that coincidence quite vocally on his show, and
this
Trump
so
doesn't
sad.
Like him. So, look, I'm not saying that this is all a big conspiracy, but were you inclined to look for one, you wouldn't need to look very hard.
Yeah, don't worry. You know, we're not going to have any baseless lawsuits against us. James is panicking.
Is that more or less the cover it off, Woody?
You summed it up very well, But so Colbert has, the most incredible thing is that he, on his own show, he was slagging off CBS, which was a bold, brilliant thing to do.
Well, John Oliver used to do that all the time, and still does, in fact, to HBO.
Oh, yeah, completely, yeah. But so, that, you know, he dared criticise his corporate, you know, he bit the hand, if you like. But the consequence is really depressing. I think it's miserable that, you know, I mean, he'll be fine.
He's
brilliant. But it does threaten to sound the death knell for...
It's the times we're living, Boydo.
I know, but it's just really sad. And Colbert did point out that, you know, he said, if it is all about the money, how could it purely be a financial decision if The Late Show is number one in the ratings? Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's fighting against it. And everyone, I think it's lovely that everyone's, all his rivals are rallying around Jimmy Kimmel and et cetera. But we'll see what happens. I wouldn't be surprised if someone like Netflix, a streamer, because Netflix has dabbled in the talk show format and the talk show genre. Then, you know, they could conceivably hire him to do a talk show for them, something like that. So,
he will have no difficulty finding work. Like, the man's incredible.
We don't need to have a whip round just yet.
Also, no. I would like to see you do an interview with Stephen Colbert, Boyd.
Oh,
and I would like you to bring up your opinion on Lord of the Rings to Stephen Colbert, who might be the biggest Lord of the Rings stan on earth.
I know.
And see what he says.
Yeah. Okay.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah. The other thing I think we should mention is the passing of Ozzy Osbourne.
Yeah. Mm.
Because Ozzy Osbourne, the Osbournes, was an absolute groundbreaking...
Yeah, one of the parents of reality television,
100%.
Right?
100%. So you cannot overemphasize the contribution that the Osbournes made to that genre of, like, celebrity-based reality TV. It was an absolute groundbreaker and brilliant. And he was such... He was the ultimate kind of weird patriarchal figure who would come up with the most bizarre things to say, and he was just such an extraordinary TV figure. Yeah, and of course, turned Sharon into a superstar as well. From a TV point of view, that's a massive, massive.
I remember we shot him at Heat a couple of times.
We interviewed him.
Yeah,
I interviewed him twice. I interviewed him in LA.
Wow.
Yeah, and I think it was one of the big hotels where they have bungalows. So their whole family was staying in this bungalow at this hotel in LA. And I was there's a big pool, swimming pool. I'll never forget. And I was interviewing, and he arrived, and I was in mid chat with him, Ozzy. And he looked up and he goes, a rat, I've seen a rat, there's a rat. And I was like, really? Are you sure? And I still think to this day, there was no
you.
Rat. No. Yeah, no, didn't mean me.
You're a rat.
He thought, you dirty rat. He thought he'd seen a rat, but there was never, ever any evidence that he had.
Rat in his kitchen. What was he going to do?
Amazing. Another youthful reference there for a UB40 song from 40 years ago.
I think it's safe to say that Elliot is now stopping.
He's going to fix that
rat. He's not listening yet.
No, anyway, I've got loads of Ozzy Osbourne stories if you want them.
Yeah. Save it for the live event.
Save it for the live show.
Oh, I can save it for Would I Lie to You. I'm going to make one up. So I'll do...
Well, you've already now ruined the game by telling us that you're going to make one up.
Yeah, but no, but I'll do like...
Yeah,
I could do one that I make up and two that are real, and people, you can guess which one's which. Yeah, there you go. That's my plan. I've hatched my plan.
Another incentive to buy tickets, guys.
Yes. Clearly.
Russell T Davies, that's one thing, but me coming up with a fictional Ozzy Osbourne-based anecdote could be the real seller of tickets.
I mean, I'd buy a ticket for that.
Yeah. Carry on.
Should we end news there?
Yes, please, let's do it.
Because I'm getting increasingly hungry, and it's not the sight of Kay's weird peanut butter thing that's causing it.
I did want to mention Sacha Baron Cohen's body transformation.
Oh, my God.
We
have to talk about this.
Yes.
So this
is
the cover of Men's Fitness.
Right?
Sacha Baron Cohen, who is absolutely shredded. It is, of course, an absolute coincidence that he recently got divorced.
Yeah.
But,
no, it's for the film, isn't it?
Yeah, well, apparently, although I have watched all of Ironheart, and at no point does he get his pecs out in that, so we didn't need to be shredded to wear, you know, a coat. Apparently...
It's astonishing.
For Mephisto, he has transformed himself, and yes, he's looking
ripped.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
How old is he?
He's looking pretty good. He's like, what, early 50s?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Like,
I'm guessing.
53.
I'm guessing. 53.
He's
53. There you go.
Yeah.
So. You know, who among us doesn't look like that when we take our t-shirts off?
Yeah. Exactly. But anyway, I'm glad I mentioned it because it was extraordinary. Yeah. Extraordinary sight.
Check it out.
Check it out indeed. Okay, let's move on to this week's reviews. And first up this week, we have The Assassin on Prime Video. And this is a 6-part thriller from Harry and Jack Williams. And this sees retired hitwoman Keely Hawes enjoying a visit from her son, played by Freddie Highmore, only for her old life to catch up with her in the most inconvenient way. Boydie is horribly compromised, of course. Yeah. Having not only interviewed everyone, but clearly not for us, but also been generally paid off by the production company. So we turn, of course, to the voice of integrity, Kay. Was this a hit man or a load of wet work?
It is an absolute hit. I love this. This is so different from the last time we saw Keely having a Greek island adventure in the Durrells. This is her being a badass assassin. So this starts off with a brilliant and utterly brutal fight sequence where Julie, so this is Keely Hawes' character, but it's the younger version because it's a flashback. She takes on like myriad assailants and comes out on top, and it immediately establishes who this character is. But what I love about what the Williams brothers have done very, very well is that it's dealt with so quickly, because it establishes, okay, she's this badass assassin, and then instantly it shows that she's got this pregnancy test. And then it flips forward to 31 years later or something. And then this is the Keely Hawes, you know, then she's retired, she's living in Greece. And it's just so neatly and deftly dealt with that I think it's like kind of a lesson in storytelling. Then we pick up and she's in Greece. And I just love her character. I think Keely's having such a great time because she gets to do a bit of fighting, but also she's just playing this character who is, she's a mother, as you say. Freddie Highmore is her son, who they're estranged, and he is a journalist. He's highly anxious. They're completely the, you know, opposites. And he comes to visit her, and he's looking to bond, and he's looking to find out more about his father. And she is just like, she is so reluctant to reveal anything about her. She's unmaternal. She's kind of cold. She doesn't know. She would rather fight someone. She'd, you know, it's more scary, like dealing with her son and the emotions connected to motherhood, than it is like, you know, potentially losing a limb. That's, and I love that. She plays it so well. So, I just love Keely as that retired cantankerous character. They sum her up. They say that she's a perimenopausal James Bond. And I think that's the best sort of like description of her. I just am obsessed with it. Like, I've had to not watch the next one though, because I want to sort of savor it.
Oh, I mean, you need to not.
I know, but it will just go too quickly. But I love the characters, and I think the dynamic between Freddie and Keely is great, because something happens, which, I mean, I'm not going to ruin it, but this whole thing is that they have to go on the run, and it's about their dynamic and their relationship. And I think the genius thing about this is that they've made the central character this middle-aged sort of cantankerous woman assassin. It's refreshing, and she is loving it.
If you remember, she pointed out when I did speak to her at the launch,
but not for us,
not for the podcast. She pointed out that she played Lindsay Denton in Line of Duty.
Oh,
if
that's
you remember,
true.
Who was a kind of surprisingly furious / violent, you know, outbursts of.
She was also famously in Spooks.
Yeah, and famously in Spooks. Yeah, but more. In terms of her capacity for sudden bout of violence,
yes.
Lindsay Denton was...
She was a great character. Was she the only, quote-unquote, villain who came back for a second series?
Yeah. She was in two series,
And it was brilliant. A nasty bastard.
She was a nasty bastard.
But she had quite a tragic arc as well.
Totally.
Nuanced nasty bastard.
Yeah. Absolutely phenomenal. I love that character.
The bit when she's in prison.
Yeah. Mm. Absolutely, 100%. And do you remember what she did to the neighbour who caused too much noise? Do you remember that? Anyway, she was absolutely brilliant character who was, you know, kind of fully capable of dealing with any men in any way she saw fit, even if she wasn't a trained assassin like this character. But this character is absolutely brilliant, as you say. But not the, I love the Williams brothers. I will not, I mean, they are absolutely phenomenal from, you know, from the Missing, which they did two series of, Baptiste, the spin-off,
Boat Story,
which James hosted the screening
of. I did.
Exactly, and I hosted the in-person screening
of. Okay, it's not a competition.
It's a rival competition. It's always a competition, you know that.
We've both taken Williams bucks.
Exactly. Remember, now, Boat Race had, they love a bloodbath, because Boat Race had the, do you remember the scene in the police station?
Oh my God,
massacre in the woods.
That's really upsetting.
Right, it's extraordinary. And now in this, so you get the opening, as you alluded to, a sequence, which is when mm-hmm. as you say, in the flashback sequence, which you don't really know what's going on, and you don't know it until she takes off her the mask, whatever she's wearing, because she's masked. So you assume, part of the whole point of it is you're assuming it's a man, mm-hmm. aren't you? It's a kind of obvious ruthless killer for hire. This isn't a spoiler, by the way, because it's literally the first scene. Then a thing happens 20 minutes later, in this opening episode, which is even more violent and is an astonishing sequence, which is so brilliantly done. I have to credit...
It's very well choreographed, isn't it?
It's brilliantly choreographed. Lisa Mulcahy directed it. She directed the first half of the series. Absolutely brilliant job she's done, because it's so cinematic. And that sequence is phenomenal. And you'll know it when you see it. Then there's the connection between... the as you say, the relationship between son, mother and son is brilliantly handled. And he's like permanently bewildered, but Freddie Highmore.
And he's so anxious. And he's looking for reassurance that she can't give.
No, and then he's like thrust into the middle of her mad world, mm-hmm. and has to like clamber aboard the motorbike so she can escape the sniper assassins. Everyone's after her. Everyone's trying to kill her for various reasons. He's so funny in it. He's like, I think this is one of the most comedic things they've done. I mean, back in the day when they first started the Williams Brothers, they did work on comedies. I mean, that was kind of what they did.
Well, there's a lot of comedy in all this stuff, though.
There is. Mm. You're right. There's always have a sense, but I think this is almost more comedic.
I don't know. I Boat Story had a thread of absurdity.
Maybe.
Like the killer who decided he wanted to be a potter and sort of chucks it all into like glaze pottery.
That's true. But I think the relationship between Freddie Highmore and Kelly Austin, it's like a double act. It's like a comedy double act.
Yeah.
Like,
the banter comes thick and fast.
The banter is brilliantly handled. But then you've got how these other siblings, Kayla and Ezra, played by Shalom Bruna Franklin, who was in The Tourist. So they worked
with
her before.
And he's going to be in The Girlfriend, which is coming up.
Indeed, The Girlfriend, which you know all about, Kay. And her brother, played by Devon Terrell, who's a total fucking knobhead. And brilliantly so. He's excellent, by the way, in that role. Like, he struts around with his shirt off.
Yeah, we see him on he's a boat wanker.
He's a yacht wanker.
Yacht wanker.
They are fantastic. And this whole series is almost about different interrelationships with different couples, if you like. And without spoiling it, the connections between them are made clear eventually. But it's so those interrelations are so brilliantly handled by the Williams brothers that all of the main characters in the show, and even all of the supporting ones, who get to me. There's a guy who ends up in prison, and you don't really know how he's connected to the storyline.
I feel very sorry for him.
He is, but those scenes are. Again, funny but dark, really dark but really funny at the same time. They handle, I think they are the best.
Tonal shifts.
At handling tonal shifts and at jumping, incorporating huge violence and then jokes and brilliant snappy dialogue and all of that. They are the best at it. I think they're absolutely unparalleled. And I think this is one of the best things they've ever done. It's so entertaining. It's so fun. And they don't give a shit. It's like they seem to have complete freedom about, you know, they all have her calling people C words, you know.
Leprechaun Center. It's so satisfying seeing her.
Yeah, but Keely Hawes, she's having the time of her life. I mean, she literally said yes. I mean, you know, she's doing stunt work. She's riding motorbikes.
She's shooting people. She's wielding machines. Don't you think?
It's brilliant. The whole thing is this is exactly what they should be doing.
Yeah.
You know, and so I love this show. This is one of my favorite shows of the year, without doubt. I've seen the first four or six. And every single episode is just fantastically entertaining.
Wait till
it's really good. I as you know, struggle with tonal shifts sometimes. And I remember The Tourist.
We all know that.
Yes.
I might get my
t-shirt back on.
Yeah, your tonal shifts t-shirt.
Yeah.
Look, The Tourist, I didn't quite, and I think it was the tonal stuff that got me, but Boat Story was a really good way into Williams stuff for me because it dialed up the humour and the absurdity, I think, more than a lot of their stuff, or it leaned more heavily into that. And actually, you start to really get it. It goes from really dark and super violent to utterly ridiculous and genuinely, you know, hysterical, like Daisy Hacker doing a comedy Russian accent.
Yeah. Wait, sorry. So why did that appeal to you when you hate Tony?
Well, because I think in The Tourist, certainly the episodes I watched, I didn't watch it all, there's quite a subtle distinction between it. So it's not quite one thing, it's not quite the other thing. And it wasn't super funny, but it didn't take itself too seriously. And I couldn't quite pin it down. I think Boat Story, it was very clear on both of them. Like, the drama really lands, but the comedy is genuinely very funny and clearly deliberately absurd. Mm-hmm. And I think just the way it's structured, and they had this sort of like comedy narrator, you know, as well. Like, all of these, and the title cards, everything about it was so heavily stylized that I really got what they were going for. I really understood it.
You need a purposeful.
Yeah, I need to be spoon fed. I need to be really fucking obvious so that I understand it, is
no,
what
fair
I'm saying.
Enough. And you need to know it's intentional.
This is subtle again, but actually, I think, again, but I think it works really well. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the humor is very.
Do you think it's subtle?
I do think it's subtle. Yeah, I do think it's subtle. Like, I think Boat Story, and this is not a criticism, I don't think it was subtle because I don't think it was trying to be subtle. It was very obvious in what it was. I think this one is a very fine thread of humour. It's definitely funny. It's definitely absurd. But it's not a comedy. It just has a very nice, sort of sharp sense of humour to it. But
comedy in dark moments.
Yeah, but the thriller at the heart of it is compelling in and of itself. You know, it's like you really want to know what's going on. There's an AI thread in the first episode, which is, I thought, quite interesting and topical, but not in a kind of clumsy way. I thought it was quite a subtle use of that, which was good. She's great. He's great. It's fabulous. Really like it.
We all agree.
It is, and that never happens.
And Gina Gershon pops up in a fascinating role. Jack Davenport, This Life fame.
Yeah.
Topically
circle.
Enough. I'm just giving you Richard Dormer, etc. Yes, the cast is fantastic.
The Assassin, then, Prime Video.
Well, it started on Friday because we followed the review embargo. We didn't break the review embargo, unlike other publications. I might mention The Guardian.
Do we get brownie points? I want Prime Video.
I was going to email. I have yet to do it. I was going to email them saying, I see a certain newspaper break the embargo.
Yeah.
We've stuck to it. Kenny Gillis.
I know Ozzy Osbourne saw a rat, but you can't be the rat.
Very good.
Yeah.
Call back.
I don't mind being the rat, by the way.
Really? Oh, no. Snitches.
I mean, I haven't done it yet.
You know what happens to snitches. Anyway, carry on.
Next up.
So it's already on, basically.
It's already on.
One video.
Should we move on to The Count of Monte Cristo?
Let's.
Please, God.
Let's do it. Right. So this is on You and Drama. It is the latest adaptation of the Alexandre Dumas classic tale.
Very good.
I thought, you know, if I said Alexandre Dumas, you'd just come at me again. So anyway, this is the classic tale of false imprisonment, hidden treasure, and long simmering revenge. Here starring Sam Claflin as Dante's, the man to whom it all happens. Now, Boydie, the question on everybody's lips is, was Sam Claflin peak Dante's or a colossal count?
Good one, James.
Very good. It's one of the old very good responses.
He's happy as well. Look.
Yeah. I've got
he's very
so smug.
But rightfully so this time.
This is what I would call a Euro pudding. It's a co-production. It's a French, Italian, British co-production of various people filmed in, you know, various parts of Europe as well, with a kind of international cast telling a story, you know, of a kind of in a period drama, very traditional period drama way. There's nothing groundbreaking or particularly bold or daring about this show, but it's solid. You know, I think it's a solid. Oh, you're looking at me like I've got it completely wrong, Kate.
No,
listeners, just in case you're not watching on YouTube.
Yeah, please
you
don't
disagree.
Watch on YouTube. No, I agree with what you're saying, but I think it's a classic story. I don't think it needs to be groundbreaking. I think
My point is, it's obviously literally a story. Well,
adaptation,
I can't remember when the book was came out in 1844 or whatever.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is,
Boyd had the first edition. True story.
Absolutely. Yeah. Totally.
I thought you meant. Oh, right. Sorry.
When you're adapting a classic old text like this, there's various ways of going about it. You can either go down the traditional route and you're just telling the story in old school. That's what I'm saying. This
Nothing
is an old school.
That.
Yeah. It's faithful. It's a faithful adaptation.
Yes. Adaptation.
Whereas certainly like the cinematic ones, they've condensed stuff and tweaked. Stuff sometimes they modernize things, but this is
exactly just
the facts, ma'am.
Yeah, and basically, Sam Claflin's character Edmond Dantès is he's accused of treason. Basically, he's got two guys who don't like him, who kind of get together and frame him for something that he hasn't done. He's come back from voyages overseas in various places, come back to see his fiancée, and as soon as he sees her, he's kind of snatched away, shoved in this horrendous prison, and left to kind of fend for himself while at least some people try and fight for his rights and fight for the fact that he's been wrongly accused. So it's kind of, and you know, I enjoyed it as it went on. Sam Claflin's pretty good in it. He's an exec producer as well. This is clearly like a, you know, an attempt to do a Sam Claflin project as far as he's concerned, you know, playing the lead role and, you know, doing a perfectly good job. Jeremy Irons pops up later in the series. He's not in the first episode. And I enjoyed it, but the reason I referred to it is the Euro pudding is it's kind of, I don't think there's anything vital about it. And you know, it's not exactly must-see TV. It's fine, is how I would describe it. And they've done a decent job. It's relatively lavish, quite cinematic. It's directed by Bill August, who is, you know, Bill August. who won the Oscars for Belle the Conqueror, and he's a kind of, you know, veteran. He's in his 70s now, I think. Veteran film director, highly respected film director. But even then, I wouldn't say exactly he brings a lot of directorial flair to the whole thing. It's solid, but I'm not going to carry on watching it in any way whatsoever. That's not going to happen. You, again, you're looking quizzical, yes. Like you disagree. Bring it on, Kate.
I completely disagree. Oh. Well, no,
You're not hosting a Q&A for this, are you?
No. Yeah. How dare you? No, I just, like, I agree with the fact that it is a faithful adaptation. It's traditional in its storytelling, all those things. I do agree. But I loved it. I thought it was a really strong first opening episode. I think it's beautifully shot. I think Claflin's well cast in that role. I'm not familiar with the story. I know the broad, you know, the themes of it, of injustice and retribution.
I thought you'd like the latter part.
Yeah. Watch your back, James. Yeah, because I had the book and I've never read it, so I was invested anyway. But I just, do you know what? It really reminds me, and I like a literary adaptation as my rewatch of Pride and Prejudice shows, is that it reminds me of, like, BBC went through a phase of adapting Dickens, and they had the Bleak House ones and, you know, all those kind of adaptations that I loved. It used to be Sunday Night, and this feels to me a real sort of, like, almost BBC Sunday Night. Adaptation that, I mean, weirdly, it's on Saturday. I don't know, but maybe Saturday. It's a new Sunday. No one's told me. And it's
well, it's a whole different world on you and drama, isn't it?
I think it should be a Sunday show, though. But anyway, because it feels like an autumn show. I really enjoyed it and I can't wait to watch
but
more.
You pinpointed
can't wait to watch more. Yeah.
You pinpointed exactly what I'm talking about because the Pride and Prejudice adaptation, famously by, who is that writer?
Andrew Davis.
Andrew Davis, thank you, who took a very bold approach to all of his adaptations, most often involving throwing in more sex action than you would normally expect from a period drama. He became famous almost for having, like, you know, romps in the middle of, scenes of intimacy in the middle of his literary adaptations. And there are other writers, you know, when Sarah Phelps does an Agatha Christie adaptation, she takes an incredibly bold, inventive, unexpected approach to telling those classic stories. And what I'm saying is,
All writers have to do that.
No, I'm not saying they have to. I'm just saying they don't in this. And my preference would be for something slightly more challenging, daring, and bold, to use the B word, as I often do, than this, which is a straight, that's my point. This is a very straightforward, perfectly decent telling. For my own personal taste, I'd rather see something slightly more out there and slightly more challenging and, as I say, daring. That's just my personal preference.
Yeah.
But you've pinpointed exactly what I was trying to say better than I actually said it when I. Okay. Started this
review. Well, I wholeheartedly enjoyed it. What about you?
I'm probably more Team Boydie. I can't really find a great deal of fault with it. It's a really clear, well-constructed adaptation of the book. But it didn't really hook me. I mean, unfortunately, I know how the book goes, but it didn't really sweep me up in it. It definitely got me in the way that, because it's kind of this wrongful imprisonment thing, like you feel furious about the whole thing and you want to see him get his revenge. So it does grab you emotionally. But I guess knowing how the story plays out, and I don't think there was, as you said, Boyd, I don't think there was anything hugely new in the framing of this story, in the way it was presented, in the way it was, you know, constructed, put together, shot. All of it just felt very, this is solid. I have no notes at all. But it didn't have any vim. It didn't have any kind of like je ne sais quoi. There was no sort of flair or panache to it. It was just very solid, very, not like workman. Yeah. I don't mean like journeyman directing or anything. I just meant it was exactly what it needed, no more, no less. And I just feel like if you're going to breathe new life into a classic story that has been told, let's be honest, many, many times before, I always think like maybe you should do something different.
Why?
With
how
it.
Many TV adaptations of this have there
That's
been?
A good
there,
question. I don't
not?
Know. There have been film adaptations, there have been TV adaptations. I couldn't tell you how many. I certainly haven't seen them all.
I'm not a Monte Cristo collector, a Cristo completionist.
No, I'm not. But I was waiting for the extra something, and maybe that comes on. But I wanted something a little bit more, you know, exciting to happen.
Okay.
I just, you know, a little bit of
fair enough
bit of
difference of opinion.
Zhuzh.
I was satisfied. But if you two counts weren't, then that's fine.
Yeah.
Don't deny that. But
gave Kay a massive Bonaparte.
What?
James. What?
Wow.
Oh, the whole, Napoleon James, is like the linchpin of the entire story.
James, I'd like to say that's beneath you, but as we both know, it's not.
Oh, God. Anyway, please come and see us live. Anyway, that is The Count of Monte Cristo, which airs on UN Drama when, Boydie?
Saturday, the 2nd of August, 2025 at 9 o'clock, and it'll all be available to stream on the U streaming service.
All in one go.
Know and love. All in one go.
Do you know what? I think that's a good shout. Because I do think, like, if it was all available in one go and I'd finished the first episode, I quite possibly would just go into the second one to see.
Maybe.
Whereas if it was week by week, I don't think I'd come back to it. But actually, if it drops in one go, maybe people should watch the first couple, I would say. Because it is a classic story. And as Kay said, he's very well cast in it. So.
Yeah.
And I want to see him get his revenge.
Yeah, that would be satisfying.
Anyway, we are
And Jeremy
running.
Irons. Have you seen any Jeremy Irons bit of it? Yeah.
Not yet.
Oh, Jeremy Irons, isn't it? Yeah, right, in that case.
Yeah.
Five stars.
Yeah.
Okay, we have to move on because we're running out of time. But finally this week, we have the returning series Jamboree, whereby behind door number one, the second series of returning Kiwi-Irish crime drama, The Gone. And behind door number two, we have Anne Rice's Mayfair Witches, back for its second season. Oh, God, where to even begin? I'll very, very briefly touch on the Mayfair Witches, which is based on the Anne Rice books, which are The Witching Hour, Lasher and Taltos. That's the trilogy. I have read them. Even having read them, I had no fucking clue what was going on when I started this. So I didn't finish season one and I've just jumped into season two. And I should qualify this by saying that isn't the best way to see this at all, because not only is it very complex in its plotting, but it's also completely crackers. So there's a demon in it called Lasher. And at this point, he's in the body of a small child and it's all a bit mad. But there's a lot more going in to this season. There's a lot more happening. Like, the plot is a lot thicker, it's a lot more dense, which equally means if you are not up to speed and you did read the books many, many years ago, you will be completely lost. But I think a lot of people gave up on the first season because the storytelling wasn't that coherent. I'm not sure they have resolved that particular issue with season two. Mm-hmm. It is still a little bit hard to follow what's going on. But, and I cannot emphasize this enough, I am coming into this a little bit without knowing what's happening. So,
well,
I'm still undecided.
I'm sort of the same about The Gone, actually.
Really?
Yeah, because I didn't see the first series. It passed me by, but I know it was very popular on BBC Four, wasn't it? And
so they say.
It's a good drama, but when you go into, I mean, it's a stupid thing to say, when you go into series two, it is picking up from the previous story. That's the thing. It's not a standalone story.
I have to be honest. I was expecting this to be more of a entirely different story with two characters from the first season, which are the Irish detective Theo, played by Richard Flood, teaming up with a New Zealand cop Diana, played by Akushla Tara Koop. And I thought, oh, well, the first series was, because I read about it, I remember when it was on, is about these two investigating a case. The second series is just going to be another case. But actually, a lot of the story of the first season carries on over into this second season.
Well, I'd say the majority, yeah.
Right? And there is a new mystery because there's a journalist character who's in the first story reporting on the mystery, and this time she's the one who disappears. So that's the new case, if you like. But even then, she's heavily connected to events in the first story. So it is a bit bewildering. There's a recap at the beginning, I would not advise people to dive into the second series. I would say watch the first series on iPlayer if you think this is interesting enough, and then watch the second. But I have to say, even then, I would still judge it, and I don't think it's amazing. I don't think it's brilliant. I think it is, it's fairly routine for me. It's like, you know, the whole idea of a mismatched cops, you know, one from one culture and one from another is fairly, that happens a lot at the moment. It's happened a lot recently. It's not particularly original. None of this feels original. The best thing about it is the depiction of the Maori characters who are interesting. Mm. There's a kind of couple who bring up another character, and they're really, they're kind of fascinating. They're the most believable part of the whole thing. I think the Irish guy's a bit one-dimensional And it's not. I don't think it's anything special. I have to say, for me, this from what, and I know it's, it might sound unfair to judge it having not watched season one, but I am doing that anyway, and I am judging it, and it feels like not the must-see crime drama of the moment, shall we say. If you want a brilliant New Zealand set crime drama, Top of the Lake, both series were phenomenal with Elizabeth Moss. They are two.
I think you've made up for it by doing that.
Thanks.
Well done.
But yeah, I did. You know, I don't like to, I'm not, there are more New Zealand based shows, I'm sure, but that is the
top
absolute
of Boydo's list.
That yeah. is top of the list of Top of the Lake shows.
Thank you. Thank
pleasure.
You, Boydie.
Thank you. I know you're trying to wind us up because we're running over.
The Gone, then. BBC Two.
It's on Thursday. 31st of July, 2025, 9 p.m, and all on the iPlayer from that day.
Mayfair Witches, BBC One, Season Two, which is on Monday the 28th.
Correct.
And that aired in the States, I believe, at the beginning of this year. So many people will already have seen it. What else do we miss this week, Boydie?
Heavily Embargo, Chief of War on Apple TV Plus on Friday. That's the Jason Momoa project about the kind of establishment of Hawaii as a unified state when it's like four separate islands. It's like a historical drama.
And we will cover that in Pilot Plus.
Yeah. Apart from that, I'm going to allow. Oh,
Twisted Metal is back for a second season on Paramount Plus.
Incredible thing with Anthony Mackie, who's like a huge star, and he's in this really freaky Paramount Plus kind of post-apocalyptic bullshit show. That's on Friday. Fire Country is back on Sky and Witness on Wednesday. That is the, not to be confused with Smoke. This is about firefighters. And it's a kind of mainstream firefighting American primetime show.
And then, of course, Mrs. Brown's Boys is back
Brown's
this week.
Mrs. Brown's Boys is back for four new episodes on Friday on BBC One, because it's been just Christmas specials and New Year specials for years and years and years. These are four, if you're a big fan, as I know
James
you
is.
Are, Kay, then that is, that's a big one. As KMH Destination X on Wednesday and Thursday with Rob Brydon. It's exciting.
That's it. Excellent. What's our pick of the week?
Oh, The Assassin. I mean,
The Assassin.
The Assassin. We have a consensus. Brilliant. Thank you very much. We need to leave the studio now. So I'm going to say, please leave us a 5-star rating. That's Kay. That's Boyd. They're both on social media. I'm sure you can find them. We'll be back next week. We'll be covering other shows. What's on? Platonic comes back for a second season. Wednesday's back for a second season. Eyes of Wakanda is on Disney Plus. Outlander, Blood of My Blood, which is a spin-off to Outlander. And then there's Ridley on ITV One with Adrian Dunbar, who will also be on the podcast, which is very exciting. But crucially, so will Paul Wesley, who plays Captain James T. Kirk in Star Trek Strange New Worlds. And I had a chat with him. You'll be surprised to hear. And he'll be on the podcast as well. And then we just have one more show before the live show, which is very exciting.
Oh God.
Oh God indeed. See you there. Pilot out.